how lovely to be sitting here on this sunny winter morning. Certainly as we walk deeply in the forest of retreat, as we walk deeply into our lives, the weather changes. We've had a big snowstorm. Now the temperature drops and the sun is bright. Trees are bare. And we keep walking on. Keep walking on without knowing where we're going. The wonderful reading we did in our sutra service, the Shinjin Gakudo by Dogen. He says, although there is birth and death in each moment of this life of birth and death, the body after the final body is never known. None of us know what happens next after this moment. And he says, even though you do not know it, even though you don't know where you're going, if you arouse the thought of enlightenment, you will move forward on the way of enlightenment. The movement is already here. Laura spoke so beautifully and passionately last night about this desire to wake up. Arouse the thought of enlightenment. This arousing the thought of enlightenment is not creating some mental formation, which of course we do, creating some image. Oh, when I wake up, then I will always feel good in the morning when I wake up. I'll be, oh boy, another day. I want to go and sit for long periods of time without moving. Can't wait. Although it may happen. And actually, we are so privileged here to be in this meditation hall. The causes and conditions that have led you in your life to encounter the Dharma at all. It's quite a rare thing, and then to have touched something or to have been touched, to have caught a whiff of this possibility, and to have a life where you have been able to come, to set aside time, to step out of your life. Of course, we step out of our life to step into our life. We leave home. We must leave home. We must leave what we know and enter into this wild and dangerous and wondrous territory to find our true home. And of course, we're always in the wondrous and dangerous territory. This is human life. And it is so precious, so difficult. There is this possibility of waking up. And yesterday we also talked about this gradual process, how our practice can grind us down, wear us away. We say we're like rocks being rubbed up against each other. I, for one, especially love the rocks on the shore, on the sandy shore that have been ground so smooth, and you can hold them in your hand and almost perfectly round, round bits of earth, round bits of stardust, hold in the hand, put in your pocket. A reminder of the beauty of being ground down, ground up. Pretty soon we'll be ground up into nothing. All of us will disappear. In fact, we are disappearing over and over. And the beautiful text of Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, that we've been investigating, such a wide doorway, and yet so deceptive, I think. Mr. Suzuki leading us on, entrapping us with the Dharma. Like Melissa, I too encountered this text many years ago and found it quite resonant, but like Melissa said, with her experience, it made me feel bad about myself. He writes with such elegance and ease, and talks about just let everything be. And when he writes it, when I read it, I think, well, of course. But then I think, how do we do this? And if you read more closely, which I think we're doing on this retreat, he doesn't say it's easy, or he says it's easy, and then in the next breath he says something else. And in the beginning of the little piece on control, and where there's the lovely image about not trying to control our thoughts, but creating a wide pasture. So if we try to control, we're just adding problems to problems. But the first sentence in this section, he says in a passing way, to live in the realm of Buddha nature means to die as a small being, moment after moment. And then he goes on, as if it's no big deal, this dying. In ordinary human thinking, we are in the mentality of wanting more. And we appreciate this, the coming and the ascendancy, this idea of progress. Every day and in every way, I am getting better and better. We Americans especially worship this kind of one-sided perspective and think, again, as Laura said last night, that if we work hard enough, if I practice Zen long enough, I will get beyond these difficult problems, this difficult personality I have. But try as we might, nothing lasts. It doesn't work, or for a while we manage to control or push down or ignore the darkness, the pain, the sadness, and then it bursts out in some inappropriate way. So we are actually trying to, learning to participate both in the rising and in the falling, both in the coming and the going. And Dogen, again in the Shinjin Gakudo, says, with going the boundless sky goes, with coming the entire earth comes. With going the boundless sky goes. So there is this boundless sky that we sometimes touch, sometimes are, in these days of sitting and in the days of our life. Of course there are moments of release. There are moments when we forget to try so hard. We forget who we are in the activity of making supper, in the activity of walking down the street on a snowy day. But Dogen says, with going, the boundless sky goes. So there is a going, there is a leaving, there is a dying. And this is not sort of like or pretend, this dying. And if we read spiritual literature from all different traditions, so many of the traditions talk about this dying, this dark night of the soul. Not as something to be avoided, but as moving into the source world, moving into the darkness, the fertile darkness. For me anyway, I really love to read about it when it's someone else's experience. But when it comes for me, when the darkness and the confusion descend, then it is no joke, no theoretical matter, when our everyday life, our everyday mind begins to fall apart, small mind. Falls apart, no longer makes sense. And then he says, with coming, then of course the entire earth comes. When we arrive in this moment, arriving where we have always been, we find the trees and the sirens, the feeling of the cold against our face. So this coming and going that is not the activity, or not just the activity of the little self, not just a small mind, but this big mind, this Buddha nature. What is this Buddha nature? Suzuki Roshi, in one of his essays, talks about how in some of the sutras it says that everything has Buddha nature. And we've spoken of that. Everything has Buddha nature. Dogen rephrased that to say everything is Buddha nature. Everything, the grasses and the trees, the thoughts and the sensations, this body, the body is your body, the true body is the entire universe, the whole world is the true self. And we can only enter this through this door of dying. Dying to our opinion. Dying to who we think we are, who we think we should be. Now this is not an activity that can be accomplished by an act of will. We receive the instruction, okay, next round, I think I'll die to my little self. And then the self is just off to the races with another task, another way to verify itself. The little self wants to verify its own existence. The little self thinks that greed, anger, and ignorance are good strategies toward awakening. Oh yeah, just a little more anger should do it. And defends itself. But fortunately, we are interrupted. We are disturbed. Whatever the mind thinks, whatever opinion is there, of course we get lost. But then something interrupts our reverie of inadequacy. We're right in the middle of really feeling terrible about ourselves. Or we're right in the middle of thinking that we're really finally getting it, finally after all these years. And then something happens. Something arises in the middle of the life of the small mind. Suzuki also talked, Melissa talked too, of these mind waves. And a wonderful image that thoughts are like waves in the mind, and that he says in one place, if we just let it settle, we don't have to try to settle the mind. In fact, if we try to settle it, it's just another disturbance. But like the waves on water, we can let them settle. But he says, perhaps even more to the point than that, that waves are the practice of water. Waves are the practice of water. Waves are not the problem of water. I myself love to paddle in my kayak. And I love going out early in the morning on a still lake. And if you're on the water early enough, everyone else is asleep. And the surface of the water is like a mirror. And you can see the light coming into the sky in the water. You can see the trees. Sometimes the mist is rising. And a magical world you hardly know you're moving in. And then sometimes the wind blows, the waves come up, the white caps come up, and wonderful to play in the waves, to be out in the waves is a wondrous thing. Of course dangerous, of course we need to be careful. But how do we go into the waves of our life? So the mind generates waves. And he says, a mind with waves in it is not a disturbed mind, but actually an amplified one. A mind with waves in it is not a disturbed mind. It is actually an amplified one. Whatever you experience is an expression of big mind. The activity of big mind is to amplify itself through various experiences. The activity of big mind is to amplify itself through various experiences. So these waves, these thoughts, these difficulties are the practice of big mind. We might say that problems are the practice of human beings. These problems, these difficulties that arise are actually not problems. This is the Buddha's first noble truth, that problems are the practice of human beings. Suffering is unavoidable. Suffering, difficulty is the noble truth, is the wondrous practice of our lives. In our Zen practice, we are not trying to escape. Of course, we are trying to escape desperately. And fortunately, it doesn't work. But we are practicing in the big waves of our life. We are learning to ride the roller coaster. Right? The roller coaster goes up to the top, and then it, just when you think it's all clear, then it starts descending. And in some ways, I think that Zen practice is the practice of riding down, throwing our hands up with delight. Woo! It's all falling apart. Gate, gate, fall apart, para gate, beyond falling apart. Woohoo! To participate in the activity of dying. This activity of being off balance. So beautiful, these problems we have. So difficult, I don't mean to minimize. But yet, this is the scenery of our life, and it is so precious. The particulars of your life are the absolute of your life. This big mind, we say, where is big mind? Where is Buddha nature? I'm looking all over for it. And this teaching is that this universal mind, this Buddha mind, is in each thing. The pattern of the sunlight on the floor, the thoughts arising, the waves. These are the activity of big mind. This big mind is everyday mind, not something special, not something precious. So of course, encouragement to us all to enjoy the waves. In one of our chants, the Song of the Jeweled Mirror Samadhi, one of the foundation sutras of the Soto side of our transmission. It said, wondrously embraced within the real, drumming and singing begin together. Wondrously embraced within the real. So Buddha nature, wondrously. Wondrously means incomprehensibly, joyfully, no way to understand it. Wondrously embraced within the real. This universal nature is the particular. This vast potential is manifesting itself utterly generously, with utter generosity, creativity, now as the pain in my knee, now as the sound of my voice coming from some place I don't know. Wondrously embraced within the real, a drumming and singing begin together, penetrate the source, enter in to this not knowing and travel the pathways, walk step by step behind the person in front of you. Embrace the territory and treasure the roads. Penetrate the source and travel the pathways. Embrace the territory and treasure the roads. Thank you. So please sit comfortably. Begin our Dharma dialogue practice.
Jenny.
Yes, Jenny. Yes.
So I was with you, David. I was with you up to not precious, and the everyday and the pattern of the sunlight on the floor and the waves, not special, okay, but not precious. I don't know. Isn't it precious?
Totally. Totally. More precious than anything in the world, but not special. Yeah. And it's so important because we can fetishize it, right? And try to limit it. So it's so good to catch that. Like, of course, so precious. But we have to throw away the idea of precious. Because, and it's also unlimited. It's like, okay, so when the sunlight comes in, just like this is the good time. But not, so everywhere. Everywhere, precious. So, not special, just the nature of life. Yeah. Yeah, Laura.
A few things, just on the precious note, too. I thought of that, but I also thought of, like, Lord of the Rings and how precious can become, like, there's that diamond.
Yeah. Very precious.
And then, like, takes on that kind of clinging.
Yeah.
Beyond, so I can see it going. Yeah, that's when you said it, I was like, oh, alright. Forever kind of scarred with that word. But yeah, I was really with you on the waves and stuff, and I think I tried to learn how to surf once, and that was, I couldn't surrender into the letting myself really just kind of eat it on the waves, and that was what I was told was the first lesson when my friend was teaching.
Oh,
and you know, I just couldn't. I was like, there's no way, I don't trust that this wave's going to push me back up to the surface. I just, I don't know, you know, I can't, how could that be?
Yeah.
But then, you know, when I think about that, how could it be that I could fight a wave? How could it be that I could actually go against it and reach the surface? You know, that's way more impossible. And I kind of felt that way when I first came in here. I just felt like, how could this wave take me, you know? And a lot of, it was like my little mind, a lot of my ego. It was like, all right, if there's going to be rules, why don't they just give me a big guidebook right ahead so I can know them all, so I don't have to be told what to do? Because in a lot of my experience, rules were just a mechanism for people to exert control, all their issues they hadn't worked out, whatever, just a way for them to just dump stuff on you. And so, you know, it was like the wave. I was like, all right, I know what this is. You know, how could it be that this kind of thing that I've had so much experience with rules or with this confinement, you know, that actually there, it could lift me up? How could it be that this big, powerful wave is actually going to bring me back up to the surface? And so I kind of like raged against the machine for a while. Went on some walks. You know, I was just like, I just really couldn't wrap my head around it. You know, these rules must be that thing that's trying to push me down, not lift me up. Because if it wasn't, they would have told me what all the rules were. I would have gotten my handbook and I would have studied it, and I wouldn't have made one mistake. And then I wouldn't have to confront that kind of ego in me, that feeling of just like, that was it. I didn't want to be told. I didn't want to be shamed. I didn't, you know. And of course, like day one, all of that happened. And, you know, the wave kind of pushed me down. And I had to just sit with it and really sit with it. You know, I was ready to kind of get in my car. I didn't really know how this could, you know, be supportive, you know, playing with feelings of, like, I don't know if it's safe here. And then, you know, I think it was that bowing that we've talked about, like, just that pause. And I did feel like, all right, I can just take one more moment before I get in my car and leave here. And I did that for a long time. And it felt like the first time, probably, I don't know, ever that I've, like, really let the wave push me down. And it did feel kind of like I came back up. So I just was really listening to as you were talking about it. And I really, really appreciated it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. There is something about... I love your friend's surf lessons. First lesson is eating water. First lesson is how to fall down. And I think it is the same thing we're asking us all to do, to trust something. And we can do it a little bit at a time. It's not an all or nothing. And of course we resist it. But what a relief that we are not the one that has to find our way up, that if we dive down, the earth, the stars, the sun, everything in the world will teach us the way, will guide us, gasping to the top. Thank you. Yeah, Jim.
Thank you. That's really wonderful. It's like you just got a little mini Dharma talk over there. That was awesome. You know, I feel like that's such a universal experience, especially, I mean, the whole public school system and just different establishments constantly. I kept thinking of the line, make an island of yourself. I listened to that, like, at a library book sale. I think, is it Norman Fisher reading the Dhammapada? Is that does he have a really mellow, strange voice?
Definitely.
So there's this section in it where there's, like, several phrases that start, make an island of yourself, make an island of yourself. And so this water... roller coaster, waves, all this, the way it's settling in, so comforting, so, I don't know, I'm thinking of the word relegating, it like relegates, I don't know if I'm using that word right, but it puts things kind of in their place in a strange way, and yet at the same time, you don't know when a wave is going to come up, or you don't know what wave you've been avoiding. You know, like the tsunami thing. You don't know what's rumbling way out yonder that you just don't want to think about, and it's going to come hit you. So that whole sense of making an island of yourself fits into that Butsuyo third section.
Right.
That where... I don't know. Just... that it's in my body, that I am showing up in movement in my body.
Right.
And my mind might push me around, but my breath is my island. My body is the island, as in, and that it just kind of blows my mind, though, to imagine that as the universe, too.
Right, right.
You know, so I can't sometimes, but I can. I am.
Right.
But it, but in that moment where I have to say, I'm going down, and, I, you know, most of the worries are no one's going to like me, everyone's going to go away from me, I'm going to be alone again.
Yeah.
You know, so I just have to say, that's the waves,
right.
And I can make an island.
Yeah.
So that's the mind, right? You can see the difference between going with things as they are, aligning with, and how the mind then scrambles in and says, no. And it comes, it's so creative. It'll come up with all kinds of ideas to resist the sense that you feel in your body that actually I am not separate from the universe, that I am being held by this big thing that's me. You know, it's not something else outside of me, that I am that vastness. And the mind, you know, we have to use words to explain these things to each other, and then the mind just gets, like, sticks on, adheres to the words, and then it gets us in further trouble. But what you're pointing to is, this is a body knowledge of going down. Right? We go down, and when we do, that's when we discover the buoyancy of the universe. Not through our mind, but through the whole experience. And that's really what the talk was pointing to, and what all the people who have spoken so far are pointing to.
I've had something from an earlier talk and also from some of the chants, and it's about evil. And my mind is going, so everything is Buddha nature, and then there's evil, or how, where does evil, and then I'm watching myself going, I don't know what evil is. I might be able to say what I think badness is, or what I think goodness is. I might have all sorts of ways my mind can play with that. I'm not able to find a place in myself for or about evil. So I was surprised to hear it in the text. And somebody mentioned it, I think it was, I'm not sure, in one of the other talks. And I'm going, what's that? I'm finding I have a lot of what's that.
That's good.
Most of them, I can watch them come and go.
So this is such an important thing in Zen, right? Is to find the thing in ourself that is the source of evil. It may be difficult to relate to ourself as being evil, but it's always, I think, these same three things, right? It's greed, anger, and ignorance. It's the small self trying to create the world that it wants to live in, right? It's grabbing for more, and no, it's raging, no, you can't do this to me. And this ignorance of feeling so separate from the rest of the world. And this is the source of, you know, where it comes from. And feeling that in ourself, right, this greed, anger, and ignorance, and realizing that it makes us act in ways that we would rather not, helps us to relate to people who are stuck in their karma, which is even more difficult, perhaps, than ours, right, and causes them to do great harm, right? But it's all the activity of this one thing. Individuals acting in accordance with their twisted ancient karma. And we are, in some sense, the same as that, right? It's difficult for us to relate to the extremes that could cause someone to do terrible things that we think we would never do. But nonetheless, these same impulses of greed, anger, and ignorance I find in myself. And I know that I can act in ways that I should not. And great humility there, right? That I am so lucky not to have the karma that some people have.
Yeah, so go ahead.
Oh, just, it's really important that you ask the question. I love Steve's response, because this is such a deep thing in us as we practice the way. And it has something to do, what you're bringing up, I think, Seamus, is something to do with view, what we call view, V-I-E-W, the way we perceive reality. And so we have different views in different circumstances and throughout our Zen life. And one view, I think, that you were expressing, when I look inside, I don't see anything evil. Right? You said that. And that's the view of oneness. Everything is the Buddha nature. So how could there be anything evil in this whole universe? We sometimes call it the shunyata view, the emptiness view, the thusness view. Just this. Everything is part of it, and it's this wonderful dance of everything in aliveness. And then there's what we sometimes call conceptual reality or consensual reality, where actually there are some things that we do that cause harm to others. And this is where it's really important to know about this greed, anger, and rather than ignorance, I like to call it delusive certainty. it's easier for me to resonate with that phrase. So these if we don't recognize this too, this is a different view. It's like we have to, you know, change where we are in the room and say, oh, from here I see this. That's what view means. So from here I see that things are good and bad. And there are things that cause harm. And we have this thing called the precepts that in original Buddhism there are hundreds of them. And they were all, that the Buddha came up with each one after somebody did something that caused hurt to somebody else. And you know what? It's not a good idea to steal things because blah, 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 blah. And it's not a good idea to kill. And it's not, and you know, hundreds and hundreds, certain rules in a way. If you look at it from this consensual reality, it's about right and wrong, good and evil. And then this other emptiness view, you know, and we keep going between form and emptiness and form and emptiness. And then there's this other view that we call the compassion view, which is really based on not knowing what's good or bad, what's right or wrong, what's evil or skillful. And in the compassion view, sometimes stealing might be the right thing to do, you know, like a Robin Hood kind of scenario, or killing might be the right thing to do, swatting a mosquito that's carrying a virus. So it becomes, in the compassion view, it's very, very fluid. And our job is to have a flexibility of view, to be able to really see that we are capable of evil. If we can't see that, then we're stuck in the emptiness view. And we are all, everyone here, capable of great evil, great destruction. And our part of our work is to cop to it, to cop to our humanness. Yeah. So it's really, I mean, obviously we're all very inspired by your question, because there are these different ways of looking at it. And so your job is not to try to understand anything I just said, but to wonder, could there be these impulses in me that I'm not awake to, and then awaken to them?
Well, and this is embracing the pathways and treasuring the roads. So the roads include greed, anger, and ignorance. Right? This is our human way. It's quite poignant that no matter how long we practice, we're still human. This is the good news and the bad news. But that we can be awake to what arises. We can meet ourself in the form of the one who is so afraid he doesn't have it he wants to grab. We can meet ourself in the form of the one who knows so clearly the world is a shimmering field of Buddha nature. We meet ourself again and again in all our many guises, and we smile and say, "Hey, how you doing?" Let's sit for a little bit and then we'll do walking.